Adrian Wojnarowski, you recently profiled Utah Jazz GM Justin Zanuck, who is experiencing a health crisis. How did this all even come to light?
Justin Zanuck had gone for about 8 years between physical examinations. His wife, Gina, had been on him to get a physical, and he had put it off for any number of reasons that many people do, especially sometimes middle-aged men, which is, I feel fine, feel great. I'm not going to get checked out.
She's like, I think, you know, you need to get a physical. It's been 8 years since you had a physical. I'm like, I'm fine. She's like, no, I think you're more tired. And I was like, well, of course I'm tired.
Between a late summer of international travel that Justin had, and then just prior to the Jazz leaving for Hawaii, where they were going to start training camp, she finally, at some point in late September, insisted to him that he would get a physical before he left.
Just got back from the Philippines and Japan, and then spent 2 weeks at home, and then I went to Australia for a week, and then I came home. And I said, okay, I'll go get my physical before we go to training camp.
Part of the irony is when you work for an NBA team, when you're a high-level executive, you know, you have tremendous access to doctors, to physicals, to medical care. And so he set up a physical, thought he would just get it done and leave for training camp. And they got some news that on some levels wasn't surprising to him given his family's health history.
What was that news?
That he suffered from PKD, which is a kidney disease that had afflicted others in his family, including his father, who just over 20 years earlier had had to get a kidney transplant, was living a healthy life with it. But the fact that now they were suddenly, as a family, and he as an individual, were in crisis.
It didn't hit me. I had to call Dr. Petron myself and said, what just happened? And yeah,
he's
I think
like,
we were in shock.
Your GFR, which is it stands for global filtration rate. It rates basically your kidney function on a scale of 1 to 100. He's like, your GFR is 14. He's like, that's technically kidney failure. So anything between 0 and 15 is kidney failure. He's like, you're not going to Hawaii.
14% kidney function left. And yet he was still active. He was doing his job. He was ready to go to training camp in Hawaii. And now they had to put the brakes on that and now look toward if he'd be able to get a kidney transplant because he was on the clock in needing one.
The life of a successful NBA executive requires you to fix everything, everywhere, all at once. So when Jazz GM Justin Zanuck found himself in the fight for his life, he was suddenly in the unfamiliar position of needing to be fixed himself. But this is nothing new to the resilient Zanuck family, who have been at the forefront of fighting diseases for their entire lives. Adrian Wojnarowski spent time with the Zanucks and tells the story of this inspirational family and explains how they have been able to rally themselves and others to their cause. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Tuesday, April 30th. This is ESPN Daily. Woj, in your career covering the game, can you give us a little bit of a background on how Justin ended up as GM in Utah?
Justin Zanuck had a unique journey to becoming a general manager. He started as a player agent. In fact, he was an agent in Chicago for Mark Bartlestein at Priority Sports, one of the most prominent agents in the business. And his future wife, Gina, worked in the office. And but he built, you know, a really impressive portfolio as an agent. And there came a point where you started to see in the NBA agents making the move to front offices. And Justin Zanuck was one of the first. You know, you would later see Bob Myers make that move and win 4 titles in Golden State. Rob Pelinka made the move, won a title in L.A. Leon Rose, who helped restore the Knicks to prominence, was a very significant agent for decades. But Justin Zanuck made that move into Utah as an assistant GM under Dennis Lindsay, and then progressed there, went to Milwaukee for about a season and a half, came back to Utah. But part of the skill set that I think so attracted front offices to him, I don't think Utah was the first that had interest in him, was his ability to build and keep relationships as a problem solver. You know, you do a lot of problem solving as an agent. In fact, I think he used the word fixer with me.
I'm a fixer by nature. Like, you know, my job, like, I was an agent for 15 years, like, fixed a lot of shit myself.
And that serves you well in the front office. And you started to see teams wanting to see things from an agent's perspective, because that helps you see it from a player's perspective when you're negotiating contracts, when you're building an environment that you want players to embrace and want to be a part of. That agent's perspective is invaluable. But more than that, he knew everybody in the business and he had the respect of everybody in the business. And that helps a front office to operate.
What was it like for him to go from mover, shaker, fixer to the one in need of help?
That was the hard part for Justin. Part of the way he would do his job, and you talk to those who worked for him, was, you know, Will Hardy, their coach, says, I never see him ever in the same part of the building.
He's constantly moving around the building, going into other people's workspaces, sitting with them, talking to them, seeing what they need, checking in with the medical team. Like, he just is always moving around. Like, I don't know if there's one spot where I see Jay-Z more than others. I feel like I kind of always running into him.
He's going door to door with their entire front office staff. These are big front offices. And he's going to people to see how they're doing, what their issues are, being proactive with whatever problems they might have professionally, personally, that might impact things. And that's how he interacts with their owner, Ryan Smith. Danny Ainge came in as their CEO. You know, he's the guy behind the scenes when big trades are happening in Utah. When you look at the Rudy Gobert trade and the Donovan Mitchell trade, he's the one on the phone with Cleveland and Minnesota, banging out the parameters of those deals. And they have a unique configuration there with a new owner in Smith, Will Hardy, their coach, and Ainge and Zanuck. The four of them, they make a lot of their big decisions on the golf course. They'll go out and play together. You know, they'll fly on Ryan Smith's private plane to Pebble Beach. And they talk through things. And it's a and Justin, though, is the one in the background. Ainge is the legend. Will Hardy is one of the bright young coaches in the league. Ryan Smith's the owner who, you know, bought the Jazz, now is bringing an NHL team there who's really become a mover in that region and nationally. Justin's the behind-the-scenes guy, and I think it was uncomfortable for him to have to become front and center with this condition and to have to ask people for help, and then have to ask people not just for help and support, but he needed a kidney.
So for me to have to come to terms with I'm the one that needs to be fixed, and that I'm the one that's supposed to help. I'm the one that's supposed to take care of everything. And to have the response that I did when I needed something and I really didn't even want to ask, but I got over it and I knew I needed to.
It took me
some time to talk about it and share. And the response was unbelievable.
Part of the way that process works is, if you can't find a match in your family or inner circle, and it's hard for him to find a kidney from a family member because many of them are afflicted with PKD, they can't donate it. They themselves may need a kidney or had gotten a kidney. Part of what gets you up on the list is finding essentially what they'll call a good Samaritan who will donate a kidney that doesn't have to be for you, but it gets in the kidney bank. And then you become eligible for any number of matches out there from others, but you've got to find somebody to put a kidney in. And that's not an easy ask of anyone.
Well, this is exactly how it went though, right? Jeff Hart, the husband of his wife's childhood best friend, passed the screening test and was put on the list for the National Registry. This pushed Justin up the list and he got a transplant date of April 2nd. The procedure was completed successfully earlier this month and Justin is recovering nicely. But the man has a family, his wife Gina and three children, Ava, Oscar, and Lucy. and you learn that Justin's kidney issue is really just the tip of the iceberg for the Xanax.
This is a family, beginning with his wife, Gina, who has endured tremendous medical strife, uncertainty, lack of answers throughout essentially their three children's lives. It started when Gina was giving birth to their first child, Ava.
I had a great pregnancy. We had fun. We just had this great pre-kids life. And then the minute I came out of my C-section, I was on fire. So
Ava,
the minute I said the room, Justin is so hot in here. He's like, Gina, it's 55 degrees.
I got a cold.
He got a cold.
Everything from body temperature rising, tremendous migraines. And then as Ava was growing up, she'd be sitting in her high chair and they see her face and her skin turn red. And they would take her and she was in tremendous pain, tremendous headaches, physical pain. And doctors locally, nationally, who could not find answers for them, who could not diagnose the issues, who could not give them as parents a pathway to solutions. And you know, Gina will say there's nothing worse as a parent than when doctors come out and tell you that your child's fascinating.
They all had that redness, fatigue, pain, leg pain. So Oscar was actually getting worked up in the Chicago hospitals, went through every department, ended up in oncology. And when meanwhile, Ava's getting worked up for her mast cell-like issues up at Mayo Clinic, and we get this, hey, they're fascinating. Never seen anything like it.
Worst thing you can hear from a doctor.
Yeah, worst thing. Yeah.
It took them on a journey in this world of rare and undiagnosed diseases where all three children in different ways have to live very differently than kids their age. They go to school. They can be active. They're all really smart, talented kids. But the one thing that they have found with their conditions that helps them is sleep, is rest. And so that means sometimes you're in high school, you're in middle school, and you've got to sleep till 10:30, 11. It's the only thing your body can, to help your body function. You've got to conserve your energy. And so you don't want to be late for school. You don't want to miss classes, but that's how you have to remedy the best you can in your body. And so creates an incredibly challenging situation for them.
Everybody that meets them, they just say, wow, they really are sweet kids, or they're really respectful kids. And I think every day is a challenge, every minute. What they have for me, the autonomic neuropathy, undiagnosed autonomic neuropathy, it's on cellular level. So it's every system. It's not just the brain, the heart, the kid. It's everything continually being in chaos, and trying to control your chaos on a minute to minute, day to day, month to month, year to year is exhausting. And that's why the fatigue is just crippling.
Even when they pick colleges, and Ava is a top student, she's got to go to a college perhaps that is near, in a fairly warm climate, that is close to research hospitals. Justin went to Northwestern. That wouldn't be an option for her because of the cold in Chicago would make it difficult. So there are adjustments they have to make, and the family has had to live with this.
This is a lot for a family to go through. In case you missed it, the condition the kids have and Gina contracted during her first pregnancy is called undiagnosed autonomic neuropathy. Like Gina said, it wreaks havoc on the body's ability to regulate automatic processes like temperature control and digestion. And then you add Justin's kidney diagnosis on top of all of this. You said this is something they've had to live with, deal with as a unit. How has it changed their lives materially, Woj?
Gina became an advocate with a foundation she created. And Ava, as she's gotten older, has become part of that advocacy. And that's everything from working at their school to educate the school about their needs and needs of other kids, but doing it with politicians at a state house in Salt Lake, doing it with lots of groups, with insurance companies to help understand that there are a lot of people who live with this condition.
When I was younger, I feel like mom knew the brunt of the information, all that. Like, here's something you want to say. This is about you. But I didn't really register it up there. It was more just, I have a job to do. I'm speaking to these people. I'm just going to do it and get through it. But recently, like last year's rare disease event and this year's when I was moderating, I just got up there and I realized everything that I'm saying is true and has happened to me and is something that I'm going through.
They don't all necessarily have the means that the Xanax do to get help. Even though there aren't a lot of answers, they still have access that many people don't. And so it's become a crusade for Justin, for Gina, and for the three kids.
Coming up, how the Xanax family continues to forge a path of positivity.
It's one thing when you are parents dealing with your children having conditions. It's another thing when the parents themselves are becoming part of this overall struggle and journey. How has it affected their unit as far as what you saw? Now that Justin is the one who's very publicly facing a health crisis.
You know, you've seen Ava now become, you know, she's a teenager going on a 35 or a 36-year-old, and her maturity, her wanting to look out for her younger brother and sister, knowing what's ahead for them and what she's gone through, and also trying to care for her parents and for their father and trying to live the life of a normal teenager. I've got two tests this week. I want to apply to a summer program somewhere. I want to have a boyfriend, all the normal things that a kid that age, the pressures and the anxieties that you feel are multiplied because of the other issues and the worry and the concern. And they do as a family a really remarkable job of staying in the moment, not worrying so much about what's ahead, and not necessarily live in a constant state of crisis. Even though you may be feeling it inside, you don't feel it when you walk in the house. You don't feel it around them.
With dad's stuff, especially when we first learned, I kind of just, I don't want to say ignored, because I definitely didn't ignore it. It was more, oh, this is happening. This big thing is happening around me, and I can't really do anything to change it. So feeling how out of my control it was and still is, again, led to me just internalizing it and almost stowing it away in this like big box of other things like that I've put away.
It's a level of chaos in your life and uncertainty, and they learn to live with it.
You know, it's ironic because, like you said, NBA people have access to some of the best healthcare in the world. We think all the time, I'd say probably more so than any league in terms of specifics, about the health of individuals. We know what's going on inside the bodies of everybody on the court. Very rarely, I feel, though, do we think about how stressful the lifestyle is for all the support staff. How has this kind of, I don't want to say raised any flags, but how is this situation with the Jazz kind of reverberated around the league in terms of what people think about for the health of not just the guys playing basketball, but everybody else involved in the franchise?
Justin Xanax started to tell a few close associates around the league that he was going to have surgery for a kidney transplant, that he was in kidney failure. He hadn't told a lot of people, and many of them found out when we reported the story. And the reaction around the league was, listen, he's a popular figure. He's a very well-liked, well-respected figure. And so people had personal empathy and concern for him and his family, but it did spark something, I think, with a lot of folks around the league. You know, the NBA is not like a lot of other high-pressure jobs. They exist everywhere. But I think that it was a reminder to people about taking care of themselves, about the toll that it can take. The NBA's calendar has become a 24/7 calendar. I don't think the NFL's is much different, or the NHL's, but the NBA certainly, from summer league to free agency to scouting, there's very little window where you are not going pretty fast all year long. It takes a toll mentally. It takes a toll physically. It's a tremendous amount of travel. The game is so global that if you're in a front office, you're traveling to every corner of the world now to find players and evaluate players. And so I do think that Justin's condition sparked that with a lot of individuals in the league and in that organization. And you know, I think Gina said that she saw Justin was very nervous about telling Ryan Smith, the owner, and Danny Ainge, and also Will Hardy, their coach, about his situation and that he needed help. I think he knew exactly how they react, which was supportive. We are here for you, which is how Ryan Smith handled it. He's like, listen, what Ryan Smith, the Jazz owner, said to me was, you know, we ask people to be all in for this organization. We have to be all in for our people. And in a situation like this, you know, that's what they showed him. And there's a level of relief with that. But I think it was important for Justin, for people to know that he will go through this and then he can live a pretty normal life and he will be back to work because this thing moves fast. And remember Bob Myers, when he left as Golden State's GM, had a great analogy. He said, the NBA is like this train. And I just got to one of the stops and said, I'm going to get off here. I'm getting off at this stop. I can't keep going down the tracks. And I got off the train. And I think that's how it feels to a lot of folks.
Well, to that point, how important do you think it was that the Jazz specifically as a franchise are who he worked for in terms of their ability to really come together and protect and support?
It was everything. And if you're an organization, you know, everybody's watching how they handle that with a GM. And Justin talked about telling his front office the news and he knew what was going through their minds. He could see it in their faces. Yeah, they're worried about Justin, but they also were thinking, what does this mean for me? He hired me. He brought me in. What does this mean for Justin? Is he going to be here? Are we going to have a new GM? And he quickly reassured them that that would not be the case. But they knew this would impact a lot of people in the front office. They have a really good, they believe, you know, a deep front office, a group that could, you know, keep the trains moving while this isn't the worst time of year to be out. He'll be back for the draft. He'll be back for free agency. He'll be back in it when they start really digging in. And so they're giving him all the time he needs to recover. But people go through these things and you know, again, and I think it's a good teaching lesson for people about kidney disease specifically, and that you can deal with it and you can go back to living pretty normal life.
Last thing I'll ask you, what kind of support have they gotten from around the league? Never mind their own franchise.
Just, I think, overwhelming support. And part of it is, again, you know, Justin has tremendous relationships. And a lot of people knew Gina because she worked, you know, she was in the business in Priority Sports years ago. And, you know, they knew her outside of just her relationship with Justin. But I think that really heartened him. You know, I think the story came out on Monday. The surgery was Tuesday. So there was a 24-hour window there before he went in, where he heard from everybody. And then, of course, as he, you know, came out of recovery. But I think it's a very competitive league. People want to beat each other. But there's also, I've always found, for the most part, a sense of kindred. It's hard. There's a lot of dumb luck involved in who has success, who doesn't. A lot of circumstances and a lot of, by the grace of God, I've been fortunate. I could have easily been the guy who's getting let go, you know, this week after a team gets eliminated. So I do think that the relationships can be pretty strong across the board. And again, Justin was just, I think, a figure that was popular, whether it was with other executives, with other agents. And so there was an outpouring that I think helped kind of buoy the family.
Well, we're rooting for him. Thank you, Oak.
Thanks, Glenn.
You can learn more about Gina Zanuck's advocacy group, the Rare and Undiagnosed Network, better known as RUN, at rareundiagnosed.org. I'm Clinton Yates. This has been ESPN Daily. We'll talk to you tomorrow.